Yes, welcome to the show here on Friday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm delighted after everything that's gone on in European football this week with Barca losing, and now we've got the build-up to the El Clasico coming up on Tuesday and a whole weekend of Spanish football to take care of as well, to be joined today by the one, the only, the man who puts the cherry on the icing cake of World Football Daily Spanish coverage, Mr. Graham Hunter, joining us today. Graham, how are you, mate?
Jealous. I wish I could write like you can talk.
I wish I had more
rich, of these. Be a rich man.
I wish I had more of these written down, Graham, because we could go on and on and on with it.
Sure.
Graham, it's been a busy week in midweek for the Spanish clubs. Let's go back to Wednesday night, in part because I keep enjoy reliving that moment in the San Siro. Barcelona, the dust has now settled on that 2-0 loss. What's been the reaction in Spain to Barca's predicament in their tie with Milan now in the Champions League?
There was some in the Catalan sections of the media. If you're looking at a media response, there was initial shock and horror and an awful lot of PR since then, talking about remontada, the fight back. Probably the only intelligent comment about that remontada, given that it's nearly 3 weeks away and Barcelona looked particularly sterile in Giuseppe Meazza, was Xavi saying, this generation, this club, we historically, maybe in all sports, maybe, you know, the things that fascinated me when I was growing up was when Ali was robbed of his title and, you know, maybe Frazier outfought him or broke his jaw, and then Ali fighting back. The concept of the fight. I remember also reading one of the all-time great sports articles. I think about a 1960s match play, world match play, where Gary Player was ludicrously out of the competition, and somehow won 9 of 10 holes and fought his way back. And the concept of the fight back in sport has been transferred to your Rocky movies and so on. So maybe that's even more alluring and attractive than dominance. And Xavi has said, look, you know, maybe one of the things that this generation of Barcelona haven't had, is the great fight back. All through Barcelona's history and, you know, other famous clubs in Spain too, there has been this tendency to venerate generations whereby maybe they lose 2-0, as they did in Gothenburg in the semi-final of the European Cup in 1986 with Terry Venables in charge and Bernd Schuster in the team and my friend Steve Archibald playing up front and scoring goals. Mm-hmm. Archibald was injured. They lost 2-0 in Sweden. And a man called Pichi Alonso scored a hat-trick in the second leg to put them into what was eventually a losing European Cup final. And there are other examples of that. The most recent, and this tells you how long ago it was, the most recent was against Chelsea nearly, I think, 12, 13 years ago, when Luca Viale's Chelsea won 3-1 in the first leg at Stamford Bridge. I was there and looked decidedly in control, but lost the second leg 5-1 after extra time. And Xavi is saying, you know, that's one of the boxes we haven't ticked. We've never been asked to do that. We've never needed to. Maybe that's in our locker. And I think that's a fair comment from somebody who's involved in the centre of it, Oliver. But I think that you've had to look slightly harder to find analysis which is detailed and thoughtful about what the heck happened. And is this a repetitive flaw given the failures against Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan in 2010 and then the Chelsea game? And, you know, I think as ever, it's a mixed picture. And I've got firm views. You won't be surprised to hear I've got firm views about that. But one thing I'll lay down early is that those who are crowing over the injured, wounded, dying body of Spanish football are very foolish and have got it wrong.
They may have it wrong, but it is a difficult position for Barca to come back from. What did you make of their performance, Graham, in the San Siro? I mean, did Milan shut them down or did Barca just not click into gear at all?
Look, Oliver, I think one of the things that's very important is that there was a lethargic and slack performance in the San Siro, and I didn't predict, I didn't understand that there might be a 2-goal deficit at the end of the tie. But what was easy to predict, and I wrote about in my ESPN column, is the fact that not only are Barcelona defending relatively poorly, there's one specific area in which they're defending very badly, and it led to one of the goals at the back post in Milan in midweek. And it's been something that's happened 8 or 9 times in the last 8 or 9 games. Now, you know, specifically what's happening that's very problematic is that Barcelona at fullback position, you know, to either side of the central defenders, are allowing too many crosses to come in unchallenged or badly challenged. But still more importantly than that, predominantly at right back, Dani Alves is tucking in. Tucking in meaning that he's coming very, very close to his centre half, often Puyol. Close enough even that if he put out his hand, he could touch Puyol's shoulder. Now, that's not where a fullback should be. And repeatedly, teams who have planned well understand that they will have a free man at the back post, able to centre, to head, or to shoot and score. And against Real Sociedad, against Valencia, against Malaga, against Milan in midweek, that's precisely how the goal has come. Now, all I would say really firmly is that, you know, we were talking about Xavi and the concept of the fight back, and thin margins are very, very important. That thin margin about, you know, we've seen games where Barcelona have been asphyxiated and have found it difficult to play. And sometimes they produce magic like they did at Stamford Bridge in 2009 and Iniesta put the ball in the top corner with seconds remaining, and sometimes they don't. So I think that my absolute key point is that while Barcelona didn't look attractive, didn't look like a champion team on Wednesday night, had they come away with a 1-0 defeat, I'd have been absolutely confident of them progressing. And I think it's testimony to how good they've been in recent years that there is a state of shock that they've lost. And OK, it's not regularly that they lose by two goals. I think in the last sort of 170 matches, I can only really remember two occasions, one of which didn't matter, one of which did. So there is undoubtedly an analysis to be had. Where I think it's imperative is that people don't forget, I have to say this out loud, the part that cancer has played in robbing Barcelona of resources, which I think would have made them a different proposition over the last 18, 20 months. Number one, Eric Abidal is a proper world-class defender who plays at fullback, but also at centre-half. Thank the Lord, his fight against cancer is going well, and he's been given the go-ahead by doctors. He can feature this weekend if the coach wants him in the team. That's the first time since February last year. It's magnificent. And it's far more important that he gets well, even if he never kicks another ball professionally. His health is paramount. But I think it would be beyond naive to say Barcelona are not missing his pace, his power, his height. And the fact that of the four fullback defenders, Adriano, Alba and Alves, he's by far the superior defender. They miss him. I think if you take that and set it to one side, equally, everybody who's a neutral or a fan of Barcelona, I want to make it clear that the first people to send condolences and animal support to Tito Villanova when he had his second bout of cancer was Real Madrid. So I think everybody in the world, the football world, is unified behind the man and saying, wonderful that, you know, the operation was conducted so quickly that his, you know, the tumour in his saliva gland is being taken out, and the chemotherapy currently, we understand, is working. He's in New York, he's doing his rehab. Hopefully it will be wholly successful. But the lead coach idea is there for a reason, and somebody of stature and command, I think, would stand a better chance of eradicating this repetitive mistake at right back. And these are things that Barcelona simply have to deal with, because they're acts of God. They're out with the control of a football club, and they've come their way, and they're doing their best. But I think if everybody says, well, this is suddenly the end, then I think they're drawing a conclusion which doesn't bear full relation to the facts.
What about the forward line of Barca on Wednesday night as well, though? I mean, Messi was completely shut down in terms of, he was unable to get anything out of that game. Do they change anything taking on Milan in the Camp Nou, especially in the attacking line? We've seen the problems in defensive, as you said there, Graham.
Well, this is, Oliver, this is something I also wrote on the ESPN on Monday, Tuesday, whatever it was, that for a long time now, they've been using Iniesta, in theory, as a left winger, but he's not. He is being placed in the front three because ostensibly it looks like Barcelona are playing the traditional, the famous 4-3-3. But what I noted was that over recent months, when Iniesta starts on the left next to Messi with Pedro or Alexis on the right, the technical staff and the players talk about it as a 4-4-2. They have been tinkering. They've been looking to get supremacy in midfield, such that Iniesta doesn't count as a traditional winger. Jordi Alba or Adriano is asked to gallop up and down the touchline to provide the width, to become the winger, to overlap. And that is part of this process that Pep Guardiola started last season, when he understood that to stay ahead of the tactical planners who tried to close Barcelona down, any good team — we're only using Barcelona because this is the game that you've picked, this is the defeat that we're talking about. Mm. It's true of the Lakers, it's true of, you know, the Giants, it's true of mighty Aberdeen, my team. you have to stay ahead of the curve. And last season, the en vogue idea from Pep Guardiola was to play three men at the back so that they could have sometimes four or even five in midfield, to look for superiority in midfield. Fine. That's what's happening with Iniesta. So there is a radical change from the 2009 side, when you had a monster up front. You had a beast in Eto'o, a supreme footballer, an extraordinary athlete, but somebody who made the defender's life hell because he was chasing and snarling and snapping, and they don't have that anymore. They also don't have somebody who wants to play up front, who's pushing a high line, who's pushing the other team far back, who was an out-and-out goal scorer, a 32-goal-a-season man in his last season there. I'm not saying the loss on Wednesday is tied to Eto'o being not there. You asked about differences, changes, and I think there's been a complete alteration of philosophy, in that we've also seen David Villa not being given, and he who is an out-and-out striker in the mould of Eto'o. I think it is an unpardonable, inexplicable error that Villa, although he wasn't available Wednesday, in general, isn't being played more regularly. He is the antidote to many of their problems in terms of pressing, in terms of width, in terms of extra goals. It's a cardinal error. I find it inexplicable. And if you start to pull all these elements together, you undoubtedly come up with a Barcelona which is still entertaining, which still is packed full of world-class players, which will win one, perhaps two, possibly still even three trophies this season, but certainly one. And you say that they've become vulnerable on the right day to the right tactics, and that sport. The fact they're vulnerable, I find not hard to explain or understand. The fact that the wrong things are being done to address it, I do find difficult to understand.
How does this then change, because you mentioned their potential to win three cups, and of course the league still looks in the bag for Barca, but they are in the Copa del Rey on Tuesday against Real Madrid. How does this change the mental game going into Tuesday night's El Clasico for Madrid and for Barca? Are they going to be reeling from this, or are they going to be up for, you know, getting back, as they will be, I'm sure, this weekend?
You know, but I don't think it changes anything for Madrid. You know, I was charmed by their performance in the first leg of the Clásico Copa semi-final. I thought that they were, you know, their resources were severely cut because of suspensions and injuries. And there are one or two players in that squad who are not fully fit. They look a kilo or two off their fighting weight. And therefore, I thought Real Madrid played with verve and aggression and intention, and Varane stood out. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with a 90 minutes work, despite it only being a 1-1 draw at home. And I think coming to the camp now, they will look at, number one, the fact that they know what they have to do to beat Barcelona. They have done it after many, many seasons where they couldn't do it. They won last Easter 2-1. They have been in a number of games now, starting from last January, where the Copa game just over a year ago finished 2-2. And by the end, Barcelona were, you know, calling for the referee to look at his watch. You know, Madrid were not running away with it, but were significantly on top at 2-2. It put Madrid out, but at 2-2 they were undoubtedly the side with more cutting edge, with more aggression. They were on top. Even when Barcelona won at Wembley in 2011, the semi-final then was that outrageous red letter day when Pepe sent off at the Bernabeu and Leo Messi scores those two absolutely phenomenal goals. But in the second leg, after Barcelona go 1-0 up, 3-0 in aggregate, you know, Marcelo equalises and Real Madrid again are largely on top. It finishes 1-1, it's not good enough. But there is no jinx, there's no hoodoo at the Camp Nou for them. They know how to win, it's within their own powers. And therefore, I think it changes absolutely zero for Madrid. And as far as Barcelona is concerned, it does change things. I think that it's extremely important that they They look at the way in which Xavi can turn a game, and you say to yourself in the San Siro on a horrible pitch, after him having missed a couple of games with a slight hamstring tweak, does he need to play this week against Sevilla? And that is a real thorny question. Does he need the extra game to get back to his most competitive? Or is it better to give him the rest so that he's potentially at his best for the Real Madrid game? I think that there are a number of players in that category, including Puyol. And it's the case that if Barcelona defend as badly as they have over those 8 or 9 games, starting with the 2-2 draw with Malaga in the Cup and following up with their only league defeat so far against Real Sociedad, Madrid are undoubtedly capable of exploiting it. I've got no doubt about that at all. So I think we're going to see a match of intense drama and excitement. I think we'll see a top-quality football match. And there is an enormous amount of pressure on Barcelona and on the Camp Nou. The players at Barcelona have been appealing to the spirit of the Camp Nou, and that can close a gap. That can give you an extra millimetre or two. It cannot win you the match. And I think there are nerves at the Camp Nou at the moment. And I think for that reason, we've got an opportunity for Real Madrid to do something. And Barcelona will view this as an imperative match, much more important than the second Clásico, which happens the following Saturday. This is not all or nothing, but it will be epic.
You've taken my next question straight out of my mouth there with that final bit on the addition of the answer there, Graham. Let's have a look then at the Europa League. Atletico Madrid dropping out last night to Rubin Kazan, but Levante flying the flag strong. It's having a big effect on their league form, though, it appears. It looks like in the league they're getting tired out. Is Levante going to start prioritising La Liga more over this Europa League run?
No, look, I'm not so sure about that. If I'm right, I think they play Rubin next. Having been there a lot during the growth of the club, there's an enormous excitement about this. There's also great revenue. I mean, it's imperative they stay in La Liga. Kiko Catalan is their president, and he has been not only drawing the club out of liquidation and administration, but meeting a debt repayment program exceptionally and showing the way forward for Spanish clubs, because we've talked before about Salvador, the man who's their sporting director, and they're signing and selling very, very cleverly. Their hit rate, their strike rate is very, very high. Oba Martins got the goal this week, didn't he, in Athens, against what looked to me as a pretty weak Greek side. And I think he represents the way in which, for very little money, players are given the chance to come and make a platform for themselves to go on to bigger and better things. Levante take a net profit, and Salvador comes up with another player. Now, that mechanism we saw at Sevilla under Monchi can be successful for a certain amount of time, but usually it's better to have solidity and stability. It's just that that position isn't available to Levante right now because of their debts. And they need to keep making money. So while staying in La Liga would become the absolute priority if relegation ever seemed a likelihood, and I don't think that that's... The way they're playing so solidly that I don't believe that's the case. And there is revenue. There's not Champions League revenue when you progress in the Europa League, but it is important revenue, very important indeed. And as such, I think that, number one, for the pride of the club, particularly, I have to say, with a pinch of relish, while the big brothers at Valencia are struggling a little bit, and they looked very much outclassed against Paris Saint-Germain in the first game, Levante are just absolutely lapping this up. And why shouldn't they? And for the moment, no, I think they'll put all their attention on going as far in this competition as they possibly can do for reasons of pride and finance.
It's an entertaining weekend of Spanish football coming up. You've got Athletic Bilbao taking on Sociedad tomorrow night, but Bilbao aren't going to be celebrating too much about Bielsa's 100th game in charge, are they?
I think that will probably become an irrelevance. You're right, because this is a massive local derby. It's a match of, you know, very divided sentiments, and there have been times when there has been a Basque unity, even given the different colours and the different cities of the two main clubs in the Basque region. But, you know, from the moment at which Real Sociedad opened their books and let foreigners in, I think John Aldridge was the first, or one of the first, Liverpool legend who said that his life was hell up there as a foreigner until he scored at the Camp Nou. There's been a sneering from Athletic about Sociedad, the club that gave away purity, that gave away the dream of our Basque cantera, the nursery system. And what I think you're hinting at is that this is going to be the last Basque derby of that nature, that Sociedad against La Real against Athletic in San Mames, because the new stadium is going ahead of pace. It's, for anybody who's not been to Bilbao and listens to World Football, it's immediately behind the current stadium, and it means that this strange, glorious, eccentric old stadium, the Cathedral of Football, is going to be vacant after this season, if everything completes on schedule, and it looks like it will. This is their last derby, and I think that in recent weeks we saw a degree of freshness and athleticism in some of their play that led you to believe that Bielsa, led me to believe, and some of my sources were telling me that he'd slightly altered his fanatical messianic demand that the players run in training, even run when they say, if I'm not injured, I'm very close to being injured, and no, you have to run. And I think that, you know, the love affair last season was pretty passionate. It was pretty enjoyable. The football was certainly exceptional. There is a golden generation of talents there, I think. There's no question about that. And I think that he's been the net winner has been Bielsa, not Athletic. Bielsa took over a very, very strong group of players, did things that helped them, undoubtedly. But net, I think he's been a negative for Athletic. It's my honest opinion. I don't think it's been a plus. And I think that it would surprise me to a firm degree, not utter shock, if he stays. I think that there might be a gentle and courteous goodbye at the end of the season. And I think that will be healthy for Athletic. And I would like to see somebody like Cucu Ziganda, who was the Osasuna coach, was an Athletic striker and was the Osasuna coach when they went to the semi-finals of the UEFA Cup and were knocked out by Sevilla when they went on to win it. Maybe Valverde, who's currently at Valencia, because Valencia is it's a hothouse of Amadeo Carboni has presented, the former fullback who was there in the legendary times at Valencia, the Italian international. He wants to come back. He wants to run the club. It's a situation where it would be very hard to say to anybody, yeah, we all know what's going to be happening at Valencia next season. And Valverde should stay, and they want him to stay. I think he's enjoying the task. But were I Athletic Bilbao, I would be working very hard to take Valverde up there and to say to Marcelo Bielsa, gracias y adiós.
Thanks, but no thanks. Graham, look, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, mate. We've taken up so much of your time today, and we really appreciate you sticking on the line with us. Have a fantastic weekend watching all the football, and we can't wait to get you back on as soon as we can, mate. Thanks a lot.
Love it to talk to you. Enjoy your soccer.
Have a very good weekend. Graham Hunter there, Spanish football journalist extraordinaire, joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about Barcelona's loss in Milan, breaking that down. Of course, looking ahead a little bit to Tuesday night's big El Clasico in the Copa del Rey. There's another El Clasico coming up on the weekend after that as well. And in the meantime, we've got the big Basque derby your way this evening. Bilbao taking on Sociedad, of course, in Spain. There's plenty more games that rain on us. Mallorca take on Getafe, Zaragoza take on Valencia, Deportivo La Coruña take on Real Madrid, and Barcelona take on Sevilla all on Saturday night. And Sunday brings you Rayo Vallecano, Valladolid against Valladolid, Celta Vigo against Granada, Atletico Madrid take on the flying Espanyol, whose form continues to just get better and better since their November dismissal of Pellegrini. And of course, Betis taking on Malaga as well in the final game on Sunday. A fantastic weekend of football coming your way from Spain. There's loads of great football coming up, though. It's the angel against the devil in France. Beckham taking on Barton. PSG against Marseille. Plenty of big games coming your way, and we're going to have a look at some of them in the rest of today's show here on World Football Daily.